How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. You're here with me, Nick. And as always, I'm joined by my buddy, Ronald. Ronnie, how's it going over there in España?
Yeah, I like it. It's going buenos, much better than France. Enjoy Spain.
So yeah, guys, sorry we've missed, I think it was two episodes. I would love to put the blame on Ronnie, but it rests squarely on my shoulders. I was holidaying around a little bit and yeah, it was a bit tough to make time to record the episodes. A lot of action went on over the last 2 weeks, though, hey, Ronald. So first, let's look back down to Cape Town. That was a big test between the Boks and All Blacks there. Firstly, Cape Town never fails to disappoint with the weather. It was cold in Cape Town. Windy. It felt like it was going to rain at any second. I took Candace down there for her first ever game of Springbok rugby. And yeah, Cape Town weather showed up for us in typical fashion.
Blue skies by the time the game came around.
It may have looked that on TV, but it was certainly not the case in person.
Really? That I find that surprising. The camera work was showing blue skies and, you know, the backdrop was looking fantastic. I mean, it was 3 weeks ago, granted. Maybe my memory is just bad.
Yeah, I think it was a good like 8 degrees or something like that when we were there. So not the most ideal. And then, Ronnie, just to look at that game, I mean, that was another close one between the Boks making a comeback in the second half. You know, what did you think of the fact that we've now won four on the trot against our biggest rivals?
Yeah, look, it's catching me a little bit off guard here. I don't think I'm prepared to answer that. Although you probably get a nice raw answer from me now. I'm proud of it, but I think it's shameful that we're celebrating something that has happened so rarely. I mean, the All Blacks have routinely got four against us on the trot. You know, they've won six against us on the trot already. And here we are celebrating four wins in a row for the first time since 1949. So, yeah, it's great, obviously. It's nice to see things going our way a bit. But, geez, the All Blacks did that to us for a very long time. And, you know, they deserve the respect for that.
Yeah, I think I actually put a post out after that game to say, you know what, it's great. We have got four in a row here. But let's not discount what the overall win ratio looks like. And that's what we need to be addressing as well. So many more games need to go in our favor to level that scorecard out a bit.
Agreed. And until that happens, I'll still claim that New Zealand are sort of the ultimate rugby team. Right at the moment, we're seeing a bit of form and it's nice to be a Springbok and it's nice to win. But geez, the All Blacks deserve to be, you know, the All Blacks can lose 10 straight games now. And I still think that they're a legendary side because of what they've achieved.
No, for sure. And then, I mean, so the last time I was down in Cape Town for an All Blacks game, I was there with you. We were watching it at Newlands and there were many, many All Blacks fans doing the rounds there. I must say much improved for this one. Definitely far fewer of them. There were some, but being in that stadium, Ronnie, I have to say they disappointed me on the beer queues this year. We did not manage to get beer before kickoff, and we arrived a good hour and a half early. That's how hectic the queues were. So badly, in fact, that my goddaughter reported to her teacher on Monday morning in show and tell that I'd failed to get beer since 9 a.m. So making me look a little bit bad there on Monday morning, hey?
Valid point.
Ronnie, then we went over to Argentina and not happy days there. I think we can delve into that one before we go back to the Wallabies versus All Blacks game. But Los Pumas getting a 29-28 point victory over the Boca. A bit concerning considering we were 17-0 up. I know many of you guys listening would have struggled to stay awake for this game. I put that post out, who's drinking coffee? Who's on the Branas? You know, what's the choice of poison to make it for this one? And then to, you know, wait up till 1:30 to watch us lose was very disheartening.
Yeah, look, it's difficult. We're a difficult fan base, right? Things are going well. We back the team, but when things aren't going well, we can all get a little depressed. And I must say, yesterday being Monday was a bad day for me. Sunday, I didn't want to watch any of the review videos. I didn't want to watch any of the content creators and what they were putting out. I just, you know, I watched a series called Yellowstone and trying to stay as far away from rugby as possible because I was a little bit depressed.
Yeah, it's difficult when it's like that because normally on Sundays we're on the group chat with the boys, we're chatting about the game. Oh, did you see what Nick Mallett said here? Did you see what Skalkberger said there? What's old Kerwin going to spew out? But when the Boca lose, that enthusiasm drops quite drastically. And I think, you know, everyone's going on about how hot it was, and that's something to factor into what went on in the game there. But I mean, we've got more of that coming in Nelspruit this weekend. So it was 36 degrees there in Argentina. It's going to be roughly close to that when we hit Mbombela this weekend. What weather, what do you think the heat played in that game, Ronnie?
Look, I'll probably want to say it might not necessarily be the same thing in Nelspruit. I think it was very difficult. The air was very thick over there in Argentina. 36 degrees, yes, but also they had the humidity was quite potent as well, which I don't think you'll find now at this time of year in the Lowveld. You know, this we had that snow just a couple of days ago in parts of Natal and also parts of Mpumalanga. But, you know, Nelspruit, obviously, a lot more warmer than the high felt of Mpumalanga. But my parents also said it's freezing there. So I think that might play towards in our favor a bit. But yeah, look, that 36 degrees with the humidity over there in Argentina, you can see the guys were struggling, you know, 30 minutes in, 35 minutes in, you know, I saw a lot of players walking around.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting one. I hope it's not as hot as that, because sleeping in those Airbnbs, if there's no aircon, is then going to prove to be a bit of a mission, especially after a day out on the jaw before the game. Ronnie, we were 17-0 up, and then a crucial moment in the game occurs. Kirkley Arrancer gets a yellow card, and suddenly Argentina come to life. I thought, you know, shit, here we are about to run away with this game. And then that was quickly turned on its head. And it's not the first time they've done this in the rugby championship, but that yellow card cost us, what, 3 tries?
Yeah, that yellow card was very costly. I agree with you. But, you know, the nature of the game and the way these teams are so professional now, and, you know, we've lost players before and against the All Blacks, and we still managed to hold them out. So I don't want it's not all coming down to that, just that yellow card. It definitely didn't help, but I don't think it's just because of that. We were 17 points up, right? And irrespective of what happened at the end of the game and later on in the game, we let 26 points go in 28 minutes before Reinach scored his try just before the end of the first half. We let 26 points go unanswered, and that's shocking. That's just, you can blame whoever we want about this game. You know, we have to, it's the entire side's defense, and that middle portion of the second half was unacceptable. 26 points in 28 minutes, it's almost a point a minute. And I think if you actually go and look at it, all those points were scored in 16 minutes. So that was very bad for us.
Yeah, I think for me, there were two major factors that led to this loss. And the one hasn't been spoken about much on the socials this week, but I feel like we were very disjointed in the centers. Lucanio Am and Jesse Creel not forming a great combination there. There was a lot of shooting up. And Choco Barres from Los Pumas had a field day. I mean, every time that guy touched the ball, it looked like he was making a break. And I'm glad to see Apalele Fassi hasn't been getting too much heat, because the poor man had a number of two-on-ones to defend at the weekend. And that ankle tap of his was bloody brilliant.
You know, a shocking thing that came out of the game that I saw afterwards, and, you know, I'm going to be off by a meter, 10 or 15 meters here, but I believe the South Africans made 230-something running meters over 120 carries. The Argentinians made 6 less running meters, but having only made 70, with only 70 carries, 7-0 versus the South Africans, 120. So our guys just weren't making their first-time tackles. They were being dominated. They were being pushed back. And, you know, that's ultimately what happened there. With far less running attempts, the Argentinians got way further.
Look, for me as well now, talking about the tackle stat, there were some really top-class Springbok players slipping tackles this week, and 3 of them stand out to me. Malcolm Marks, he was not making his tackles. Marco van Staden, normally a big hitter, also missing his tackles. And then Polly. Polly's our best defensive 10, and he also slipped a few, putting pressure on the back line. So really not a top polished performance from the boys here.
Not at all, though. I agree with you. Look, I'll let the forwards slide a bit, because with the forwards, we know that it's about battle stats. It's not necessarily about being successful in making your tackle, but it's about getting up and trying to get into the next battle again. But with Pollard, I agree, that was shocking. But he looked finished when he left the field.
No, that's very true, Ronnie. So, you know, we say here now the Springboks this, the Springboks that, but I think it's also important to give credit where credit's due. And I think that back three of the Los Pumas are deadly on their day. When those three get their noses up, they are a nuisance to deal with at the breakdown and in the wider channels. And it's actually incredible that Los Pumas pulled off a win like this, outscoring us when their scrum was going backwards at a rate of knots. You know, Ox really had a crack up front.
Yeah, look, just with respect to Argentina, they've got a lot of players that, you know, they great running backs, very good with ball in hand, you know, loose play as well. They can find the gap. They're willing to run backwards, but to run around you and make meters again. You know, a lot of their players have experience in seven. So that was the game that was made for them. Disjointed, it's chaos, it's running, and it's exciting though. So look, Argentina played very well. And if we think that we lost that game because of our mistakes and we don't give Argentina credit, then that's a mistake of us too. To say that.
Yeah, then we would be running into trouble this weekend. Argentina, for the first time in the Rugby Championship's history, have beaten us, the Wallabies, and the All Blacks in the same season. So anyone not taking this Los Pumas side seriously is doing a great disservice to them, because honestly, they've taken it a step up. Now they just need to nail consistency, being able to back up these big performances. Ronnie, you know, we look at this game, we look at the team that was picked, there's been plenty of chat about it. And I just want to discuss the Marnie Leboeck situation for a little bit here, because there's numerous angles that you can take. And, you know, it's difficult as Springboks to lose, but I don't think you can solely place it on Marnie, right? We all know that Marnie is not the strongest kicker. The box could have won the game earlier. Pollard also missed a kick. Marnie missed one for touch. The thing is, at what stage does the call get made? Right, Marnie's a playmaker. So if we want his style of play on the field, we need a kicker on the field, because throwing Marnie in for his playmaking ability and then chucking him in as the kicker is not working.
Yeah. Look, I think interestingly, we saw on the socials today that Cheslin and Jaden were kicking alongside Marnie today. So that's worth noting. So they are looking at backup kickers, but quite right. And I think it's difficult when Marnie is kicking and doing well at practice. And, you know, because that's where you check, that's where you see, you know, how somebody is, whether they are going to take on a certain role in the game. And, you know, he looks prepared, but then the nerves get to him and then he starts shaking and then, you know, he starts overthinking it and then he pulls the kick. But look, I think we're often very harsh on the kickers for missing game winning kicks, but we should never have put ourselves in that position. You know, we let Argentina score 26 points unanswered, right? So, you know, it's on the team. Team needs to look at themselves, and it's very easy for the team to just shift the blame onto the kicker, and for us fans to just look, the kicker missed the kick. We can't do that. We can't be unfair. We have to be very fair about the fact that we let all those points slip, and that's unfortunate. And we put Marnie in that position, but it is a concern. It is a concern. The guy needs to learn how to kick, and I don't know how he's gonna learn to kick. Because, you know, all the talk says he does extremely well at practice.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. If he's nailing them at practice, then it comes down to a mental thing on game day. But it's a pity that Sasha is injured now, because it would have been great to have Sasha and Marnie on the field. Let Sasha do the goal kicking and let Marnie play his natural attacking game, you know?
Yeah, look, I think this plan, Marnie knew he was going to be playing in this game weeks ago. If we look at it, Sasha's had a starting role. Pollard's had a starting role, and now Marnie's getting his starting role. So, you know, Russie's cycling through these three fly halves at the moment, and he's doing really well. I'm sure he was just picked because, you know, it was always the plan. And sure, I agree. There needs to be a backup plan. If you want to take advantage of Marnie's attacking minded play, then you need a kicker. Butch James. Butch James was a brilliant 10. Well, some would say not, but he was a brilliant 10 for the Springboks, but he didn't kick for posts. Monty did.
Yeah, no, for sure, Ronnie. Then the last one I just want to have a closer look at is the lock situation for the box. So great to see Arkea and John Kane returning to fitness in the URC this weekend. So they'll probably be here in November. But Salman Murat and Ruan Nokia. Now, for me, they went anonymous in the beginning of the game. When things got tough, we didn't seem to have that physicality. when Irban came on, for me, Ruan lifted his game a lot. And maybe that's because he's more like a Sos who gets through the hard graft, but not the big physical exchanges. And I felt like they played in conjunction together. But I don't think we can go into another test starting Salman Murat and Ruan Nokia together. I think it really dented the physical presence of the Bok pack.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised that you feel that way about Nurkia. I thought he played very well. And I thought he was somebody, he was a forward we could rely on. And yeah, maybe I just looked at it in the back end of that game rather than at the beginning, like you said, when he was paired with Salman. But yeah, look, I'm a big fan of Nurkia at the moment. I think he's been a good find for us, or, you know, he's served his purpose really well. Salman is, for me, definitely a concern. I hear a lot of positives about him, but I haven't seen that on the field. I don't feel his presence. I think that, you know, I wanted to use the word lackluster, but I don't know if that's maybe too harsh or not. But I don't feel him asserting his physicality over somebody else. He doesn't do what Irban does. He doesn't do what our other physical forwards do. I just feel like he's walking around the field. He's not getting up quick enough. He's not getting into position. And maybe that was just because it was 36 and incredibly humid. But I was a little bit disappointed in Salman's performance.
Yeah, yet to impress in that position. So I think Rassie's done the right thing here, rotating the squad. Ultimately, we want a strong squad for the World Cup, and this is how you get there. Yes, we're all disappointed we haven't yet won the Rugby Championship. We've got the opportunity to do that this weekend. But, you know, a man that's won us two World Cups, you kind of got to trust him, eh?
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I think Rassie's got a big plan. And I think even if, you know, I strongly believe that the plan was always to play Marnie. But I think, you know, put that aside, Rassie was always going to play Marnie because he backs Marnie. He knows what Marnie's about. He backs his players and he's teaching us a valuable lesson that you don't just drop someone, you know, if they have an off day. You help them. You know what they can bring to the table, and you need to help them get over their issues, because the World Cup is still 3 years away. And if you can prepare your player to be exceptional by then you've done your job. But if you're just going to throw a player to the curb, you know, I don't know. So he's rotated very well. He's put some interesting players in. We'll talk about that surely in a moment.
Yeah, so let's quickly then take a short look at the Wallabies versus All Blacks. So that game happening in Australia. Wallabies going down 28 points to 31. Much closer than many would have predicted. And I think Razor will be surprised at himself for the struggle he's experienced in the step up to international rugby so far.
I think the biggest surprise for me is the fact that the halftime score, or that the All Blacks were leading 21-0 at one point, and then they, you know, they went to bed. They also had a blowout start like the Boks did, and they too went to bed and let the Wallabies creep back in. And I'm very impressed with the performance from the Wallabies, because, you know, when you're 21 points down, typically you give up. You know, you start dropping your head, you start skulking around, and you know, you just pray for the game to finish. And the Wallabies, you know, stuck through. They took it right to the end, 28 to only lose by 3 points. And, you know, 2 weeks previously, getting thumped by Los Pumas, I thought it was a fantastic performance by the Wallabies and something that they can be proud of.
No, for sure. I have to agree with you there, Ronnie. And another important milestone in this one for good old Pantofel, James Slipper getting 140th cap, becoming the most capped Wallaby of all time. So shout out to Pantofel there. What an achievement. Rico Ioane also getting his first try in 2024 in this game. That's for club and country. So Rico's been through a bit of a dry spell now, and he'll be hoping that that's over. But the most interesting stat, Ronnie, and the one that's flying on the socials a lot, the All Blacks haven't scored in the last 20 minutes of any rugby championship fixture this season. And that's complete opposite to the All Blacks we used to know, who, if you weren't two tries ahead in the last 10 minutes, you were in cuck.
I absolutely agree with you. It's so shocking to me how that is unfolding there. Like, they were the team that were going to score 2-3 tries in the last 20 minutes, and you were going to lose the game in the last 2-3 tries. But, you know, as it stands, all you need to do is hold out 60 minutes with the All Blacks, and you're in with a shot. So, yeah, very surprised. And it's not just 20 minutes. Like, if you actually go and look at you know, against us, against Argentina, when actually they did score their last point. Sometimes they went 45 minutes or 40 minutes without scoring a single point in that second half. You know, scoring 3 points at most in the second half. That's unknown, and I don't know why that's happened.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting one to keep an eye on for the November tours as well, if that's something Razor manages to address. So, Ronnie, we're heading then over to the last round of the Rugby Championship. The trophy's on the line in Nelspruit. The Box can win it. Los Pumas can win it. Los Pumas can win it. There's a lot going on social media, but it's actually fairly simple. Los Pumas must beat us, securing full 5 points and not letting us score any log points. The 37 points differential doesn't come into play because the first determining factor is who's won the most games against one another, and then they would have won two. So that's what they need to do to win it. Box, they just need 1 point out of this fixture to take it. So a loss with a bonus point would see them secure the trophy. But Ronnie, a couple of changes to the side. Should we have a look at it?
Yeah, it's an exciting side. I'm looking forward to this weekend. I'm excited about the six or seven players that he left behind that are coming into the squad. So yeah, let's see what happens.
Yeah, much closer to a full strength team. So Oxen Chairs rejoined in the front row by Bongi and Frans Malherbe. They're rounding out a very experienced front row for the Bokke there. Eben Etzebeth gets promoted off the bench again to start at number 4. He's going to become the most capped Springbok of all time in this one with 128 after equaling Big Vic's record last week. And then Ruan Nokia pairs him. So I'm very keen to see what that combination looks like from the start of the game together.
Absolutely. And just a quick one before we move on. How many caps do you think Eben's going to end up with?
I'd love to see him pip Alan Wynne-Jones at 160, hey?
No, that's too much. Too much. Really, 160 is a lot of rugby.
It's possible. Eben plays 3 more years. It's possible.
336. It's only just then. Right, if he plays 12 games a year, but he's not going to play 12 games a year.
And forget, we've got a good 8 at the World Cup, hey? Thank God he's not Irish. So, Ronnie, then over to the loose trio. We've got Siakalisi back to captain the side. He's joined by the Malmesbury Missile and Peter Steph de Toy on the flank, and Jasper Visa retaining the 8 jersey. I mean, you've got to love the look of that back three, hey?
Yeah, I think any back three with Peter Steph de Toy, and it makes me happy. I don't care. You know, I love Sia, I love Jasper, but, you know, it doesn't matter who they play at 6 and 8, as long as Peter Steph de Toy is there.
Yeah, he's the mainstay of the Bok physicality and the Bok pack at this moment. Ronnie, over to the back line, there's been an interesting selection, or the most talked about selection is Jaden Hendricks at 9, paired with Marnie Lubbock at 10. We have briefly touched on that. And in all honesty, I think it's the most Rassie Erasmus thing to do. Back Marnie for this one. It's been the plan all along. And you know what? Stuff what the media say. This is Rassie's Springbok team, and they're going to go out and prove a point here.
You know, I also had something to say, but I'm not gonna. You said it best. This is the most pricey thing. You know, it's a good combination, 9-10 combination, I think. And I look forward to seeing Marnie prove us wrong.
Yeah, for sure. So let's give it horns, Marnie. This is your chance. A back three, Ronnie, featuring the return of Cheslin Kolbe. You got Kirtley Arendse on the left wing, Chezzy on the right wing, and Apalele Fassi beating out Fili LaRue and retaining that 15 jersey.
I'm proud of Apalele, right? He's had a couple of good games that he's strung together now, and he's getting the nod to play again. And I'm excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, and then the midfield, you know, back to the tried and tested. They must be on 31, 32 test caps as a centre pairing now. Damian D'Alende and Jesse Creel. Absolutely no complaints there from my side.
None from me.
Ronnie, then the bench, we've gone for a 6-5-3 split, apologies. So we've got Malcolm Marks, Gerard Steenekamp, Vincent Koch for the front row replacements. There is no lock replacement. And then we've got Ulrich Lowe and Kwaga Smith doing duty there to round out the forwards. What do you think of those five tasked with there, Ronald?
You know, it's also the first thing that I noted when I saw the team sheet earlier today. There's no lock replacement. So, yeah, this means Eben and Ruan are going to go the full 80, right? And we need them to do that. So unless there's an injury, Peter Steph de Toy will move into lock and we'll make another plan. But yeah, Eben and Ruan going the full 80. And I think they can do it.
Then we've got quite a bit of experience covering the back line from the bench. Ronnie Kurbis, Reinach, Andre Pollard, and Lucanio Am. So they're quite a versatile trio that can make their way onto the pitch later in the game when needed. and bringing quite a different style of play to what we're starting with.
Yeah, not just that, a bit of experience too, right? So when things are going pear-shaped at the end there, we need somebody to win the game for us. Quivis and Andre. Yeah, I'm excited.
So are we giving predictions in this one, or we're not going to jinx it?
I'm not giving predictions. You can give predictions all you want. I'm not giving any prediction.
No, I won't be taking a prediction or a chance in this one either, but I will be heading down to Nelspruit this weekend to watch the game. A couple of the boys are coming with me, and we're watching with your parents, Ronnie, so that's going to be quite lekker. It's much more fun watching the rugby without you. Everyone's much more fierce. You know, no one's telling us we have to go home early or we're making too much noise. So looking forward to it.
I'm not going to respond. Carry on.
Ronnie, then on Saturday morning at 9:05 at Sky Stadium in Wellington, not the All Blacks' happiest of hunting grounds, they will face the Wallabies, hosting them in the second Bledisloe Cup fixture. They last played here in 2020 and it was a 16-all draw. So making for an interesting matchup. Can the Wallabies take this one, Ronnie, and turn it around after coming so close?
They can.
Will they?
I don't know if they necessarily will. But look, why the All Blacks are going back to Wellington, I don't know. So, you know, I really feel like saying the All Blacks are going to probably pep the Wallabies by 35 points. It's going to be a ridiculous blowout or something. But the fact that they're playing at Wellington makes me think that, you know, the Wallabies could just easily go on and do this.
It would honestly be the greatest if they did. Sorry, Dan, if you're listening in on this episode, we're going to have you on again to give you a bit of stick, bud. But
no, be excellent. The reality is, we love to sometimes see the All Blacks lose a game or two because they've just been that good for so many decades.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But yeah, let them lose to the Wallabies. It would be fantastic. Ronnie, then quickly, we had the Currie Cup final this weekend and the Sharks, you know, the team that you ditched. Yeah, that one. They've now won the Challenge Cup.
What are you talking about?
Cup.
I've always been a Shark.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, have sorry you? I interrupted you there. Carry on now. I just want to make a show. I've always been a Shark. What are you talking about?
We can go back a few episodes and see you fence it, eh? So what did you think of Jordan Hendrickson slotting a 59-meter kick to win that game? In all honesty, I don't think the Lions wanted to win the game. They had the line out, they took the maul, and then didn't kick the bloody ball out.
I'm also a little bit, I don't know what happened at the end there. And yeah, I'm just as shocked as you. But yeah, Jordan, clutch moment, 59 meters, he's put his hand up as a potential future Springbok.
Especially after his debut didn't go so well this year. So it'll be interesting to see what comes from his heroics there. Then Ronnie, the URC is getting started. Or it has gotten started, but the South African teams will be making their way into the competition for the first round this weekend. And just an exciting announcement for all of our listeners. We have now paired up with the URC officially as part of the URC Go program. So we will be bringing you quality video content, quality stats on the game. We'll be covering that in the podcast as well. And next week, Ronnie and I will definitely do a bit of a season preview, what you can expect from the South African sides. But really stoked that we've got that partnership up and going, hey, Ronald.
Absolutely. I've already seen some of the things that you've shown me that have come through, and you're going to put some quality material out there. Hey?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So very keen to get that going and bring you better coverage there. And then, Ronnie, the May Fokchom moment of the week. And it's not every day we get to celebrate a big front rower, but I think it has to go to Bantofel. 140 tests for the Wallabies, the most capped one ever. And with a name like James Slipper, you know, we've got to give it to him.
I want to disagree with you. What about Jordan's 59-meter kick? That should be the bloody May Fokchom moment of the week.
Oh, you're putting it to a vote again, hey, Ronald?
No, you just decide you never consult me on these things. So, you know what? We have Nick's moment of the week and we have Ronnie's moment of the week, and let the people decide.
Let's listen to the turncoat over here, hey, coming back to the Sharks. Well, guys, that's it for today's episode.
Thanks for joining for the banter and staying for the chat. May Fokchom, dit was lekker.
Make sure you smash that like button and subscribe on your preferred listening platform so you won't miss a moment of the madness.
Catch you back here next Wednesday.